This content is AI-generated for informational purposes only and should not be directly used for clinical decision-making.
Hello and welcome back to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. I'm Dr. Aris, Senior Attending Neurosurgeon.
And I'm Dr. Alara, Research Fellow. Today we're looking at a fascinating new study from the Revista Médica del Instituto Mexicano del Seguro Social, published in 2026. The paper is titled Thinking, Evaluating, and Replenishing the Fibrinogen Hemostatic Strategy in Neurosurgery by Annika Malagon and Sosa Bolio.
This is a timely review, Alara. In our field, hemostatic control is a constant challenge. We often say that in neurosurgery, there is no small bleed. Even minor variations in blood volume can critically alter intracranial pressure and, ultimately, the neurological prognosis.
Exactly. And this paper focuses on one specific player that often gets overlooked until it's too late, fibrinogen. The authors describe it as the first coagulation factor to be depleted during hemorrhage. It's not just a precursor to fibrin, it's an early marker of coagulopathy and a key determinant of clot stability.
That's a crucial point for the residents listening. When you're dealing with a massive TBI or a complex tumor resection, you can't just wait for the PT-PTT to come back. By the time those are deranged, your fibrinogen might already be bottoming out. The paper mentions some specific numbers from a 2020 study by Lee et al. Regarding TBI patients, doesn't it?
It does. They analyzed over 2,500 patients with traumatic brain injury. They found that nearly 39% of patients had fibrinogen levels below 200 milligrams per deciliter upon admission. Even more interesting, another 35% were in that gray zone between 200 and 300 milligrams per deciliter.
And what did the outcomes show for those groups?
The evidence suggests that maintaining concentrations between 250 and 300 milligrams per deciliter, so 2.5 to 3 grams per liter, is associated with better survival and significantly better functional neurological outcomes at the 3-month mark.
That's a higher threshold than many traditional protocols, which often only trigger replacement when levels drop below 150 or 200. But in neurosurgery, as the paper points out, levels below 150 to 200 milligrams per deciliter are already associated with hemorrhagic progression. We need to be more proactive.
That leads us to the core paradigm of the paper: think, assess, and replace. It's an integrated model of goal-directed neurohemostasis. Let's break down the think part first. This is about understanding the pathophysiology. Why is fibrinogen so vulnerable in the neurosurgical patient?
Well, the paper highlights that hypofibrinogenemia is an active process that actually amplifies brain damage. It's not just about losing blood, it's about consumption. In cases of TBI, subarachnoid hemorrhage, or extensive tumor surgery, the depletion reflects an accelerated consumption. Fibrinogen is also involved in platelet aggregation and the cerebral inflammatory response.
And there's also the mention of microthrombosis and endothelial dysfunction. Pawelczyk et al., cited in the review, emphasized that fibrinogen plays a role there too. So if we aren't thinking about fibrinogen from the moment the patient hits the ER or the OR table, we're already behind.
Right. So once we are thinking about it, we move to assess. How are we measuring this in 2026?
The gold standard discussed is the use of viscoelastic tests, like ROTEM or TEG. These allow us to assess the firmeza del coagulo, or clot firmness, in real time. The paper notes that guided administration via these tests allows for dose optimization and a significant reduction in total transfusion requirements.
But we have to be realistic. Not every center has a ROTEM machine sitting in the corner of the OR.
True. The authors acknowledge that. In the absence of viscoelastic technology, the CLOS method remains the standard laboratory utility. The key is the patient blood management, or PBM, model. It's an anticipatory strategy. Whether you use ROTEM or the CLOS method, the goal is early evaluation and continuous monitoring.
Let's get to the replace part of the strategy. This is where clinical practice varies wildly. If we see that a patient's fibrinogen is low or we're in a massive hemorrhage situation, what are our options according to the review?
The paper makes a strong case for fibrinogen concentrate, or FC, over traditional options like cryoprecipitate or fresh frozen plasma.
Why is that? I know many residents are used to just ordering 10 units of cryo.
Efficiency and safety. Fujiwara et al. Showed that early replacement with fibrinogen concentrate avoids hypofibrinogenemia in over 90% of cases without increasing thrombotic events. Niakan et al. Also highlighted that FC is superior because it allows for a more targeted, rapid increase in plasma levels with much less volume. In neurosurgery, where we are often worried about volume overload and its effects on cerebral edema, that's a major advantage.
Exactly. With cryoprecipitate, you're giving a lot of extra volume and other proteins that you might not need. With the concentrate, you can hit that 250 to 300 milligrams per deciliter target precisely.
The paper mentions that this reduces both hematoma expansion and the overall need for other blood products.
It's really about moving away from empirical or formula-driven resuscitation to goal-directed therapy. The authors call it a personalized management of bleeding.
It's a shift in mindset. We shouldn't be thinking how many units of blood has this patient lost, but rather what is the current stability of this patient's clot and how much fibrinogen do I need to stabilize it?
And for our medical students listening, why is this so specific to the brain? Why does it matter more here than, say, a leg injury?
Because of the Monroe-Kelly doctrine, essentially. The brain is in a fixed box. As the paper states, even small variations in bleeding can critically alter intracranial pressure. A few milliliters of extra blood in a thigh muscle is a bruise. A few milliliters of extra blood in the thalamus or the posterior fossa is a catastrophe. Fibrinogen is the glue that stops that small bleed from becoming a terminal one.
The review also mentions that this isn't just for trauma. It applies to spontaneous intracerebral hemorrhage and even elective cases like extensive tumor resections where you expect significant blood loss.
It's a comprehensive approach. To summarize the paper's findings for our listeners, fibrinogen is the first factor to go. We need to think about it early, assess it, ideally with viscoelastic tests or the CLOS method, and replace it, preferably using fibrinogen concentrate to reach those higher targets of 250 to 300 milligrams per deciliter.
And by doing so, we're not just giving a supplement, we're actively preserving the hemostatic potential to improve functional outcomes. The think, assess, replace model really consolidates what they call a model of goal-directed neurohemostasis.
It's a great framework. Pensar, evaluar y reponer. It should be a mantra in the neuro ICU and the OR.
Definitely. This review really bridges that gap between basic pathophysiology and the clinical reality of the surgical suite.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Thank you, Dr. Alara, for bringing this paper to our attention.
My pleasure, Dr. Aris.
To our listeners, remember, in neurosurgery, every milligram of fibrinogen counts. Think early, assess accurately, and replace precisely. We'll see you next time on the Neurosurgery Hub podcast.
Goodbye, everyone.